Good morning.
Good morning.
This morning I've chosen to talk about Nehemiah. I have, on one of our upcoming Wednesday night discussions, I have written down that I will discuss the book of Nehemiah. So I've been reading and studying a lot and just decided to do a lesson on the first two chapters of Nehemiah. I see that there's no way I'll be able to cover my lesson today just due to time, and what I probably had planned was too much. That's okay. It is still under our Wednesday night study. This morning, though, I wanted to look at the story of Nehemiah and see what we can learn from him and his story. I think that we're going to find that there are ways in which God worked through Nehemiah, and those ways still apply to us today. I think we can identify how he handled a very daunting task and then apply those methods to how they can help us in our lives today. This morning, I am guessing that there are some of you that are here and you are finding that some part of your life needs to be rebuilt. That some part of your life needs to be restored. Maybe you are sitting there thinking, no, I think everything's great. Well, good. Maybe at some point in time in your life, you will find that you will have an aspect of your life that needs to be rebuilt or restored. And I think that Nehemiah can teach us something. Some of us have found ourselves, either previously or today, you're sitting there and you have walls that are burned down. Some of you are realizing maybe that your kids are taking a path that you don't think is good. Maybe you are involved in a relationship that you think is not as strong as it should be. Maybe you think that your boss, maybe the relationship that you have with your boss is not as good as you'd like it to be. Or your relationship with your neighbor, or your relationship with close friends is not where you want it to be. I tell you that I think the lesson this morning that we're going to read about Nehemiah rebuilding will help us all. God used Nehemiah in an awesome way. When he was faced with the problem, we read right there, right off the bat, that he sat there. That's not usually what you think of as somebody when they're faced with a problem. But we know that he just sat, he mourned, and he prayed. He didn't run out and try to fix the problem. He didn't race out and panic. He sat there. Something that I think that we can learn from. He was patient, he waited for God, and he prayed to God. John Bunyan was an author of a book some of you probably have read or have heard of, Pilgrim's Progress. And there's a neat saying in there, and it says, you can do more than pray after you have prayed, but you can't do more than pray until after you have prayed. Nehemiah's life demonstrates that. And I'm going to say it one more time because I saw some of you saying it in your head. You can do more than pray after you have prayed, but you can't do more than pray until after you have prayed. Nehemiah is a perfect example of that. It starts there, and thank you, Eddie, for reading the first two chapters, because that will save us a ton of time. It starts there in chapter 1, Shushan, the capital of Persia, which was the capital of the superpower of the world at that time. Nehemiah is setting the stage here for us in those first few verses, and we don't know much about Nehemiah. Some have speculated Nehemiah might have been in captivity at one time and maybe rose to a place of maybe some prominence or a place of respect. We know that in verse 11, if you skip down there in that first chapter, it says, O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name, and let your servant prosper in this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. And we might read that and we think, well, that's not very impressive, so you're a cupbearer, big deal. Well, from what I read, the cupbearer is pretty important and esteemed very highly by the king. This is not only just the person that's going to taste things to make sure that the king didn't get poisoned, but this is a person that was chosen from amongst their people, probably a good-looking, someone that was well-spoken, someone that when the king had a group of people come together, that he could interact with them, he could read the room and know what to say and lighten the mood and kind of set the stage for the king. He wasn't just someone that behind the scenes tasted a drink and said, yep, you're good, you're not going to die. So we know that the king valued Nehemiah. This is like maybe today the chief of staff, I guess, possibly. Nehemiah was, remember, not only just a cupbearer, but a cupbearer to the most powerful king at that time. For 40 or 50 years, the Jewish people were not able to rebuild the walls. Why? Have you ever asked yourself that? Well, I think there's a ton of reasons, but lack of leadership, lack of faith, lack of priority, lack of unity, lack of vision. How many times have you seen those dynamics in your world today? Maybe at work, something that needs to be done and doesn't get done. Why? All those things. Lack of unity, lack of faith, lack of all those things. Vision. The same issues that applied at that time you've seen in your life. Well, I will tell you that there's always going to be an enemy that's going to try to thwart God's will. There was then in this story, there was today. This enemy, as we know him, of Satan. Just as Nehemiah was facing that enemy, there are enemies like that today. Spiritual attacks happen. In Ephesians chapter 6, and I just want to turn over there to remind us, Ephesians chapter 6 verse 12 says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." He wasn't just wrestling against flesh and blood then. There was a spiritual component, this darkness. Same as today. You can't see them with your own eyes. If we back up, and we're going to go into this more probably in our Wednesday night study, but Ezra and Nehemiah, these books would be probably one book at the time. Now, we see them too in our Bible. But if we go back to, and I will just briefly, Ezra chapter 4, verse 4, it says, "Then the people of the land tried to discourage the people of Judah. They troubled them in building." And if I skip down to verses 11 through 13, it says, "This is the copy of the letter that was sent to him, to King Artaxerxes, from your servants, from the men of the region beyond the river," and so forth. "Let it be known to the king that the Jews who came up from you have come to us at Jerusalem and are building the rebellious and evil city, and they are finishing its walls and repairing its foundations. Let it now be known to the king that if the city is built and if the wall is completed, they will not pay tax, tribute, or custom, and the king's treasury will be diminished. Now, because we receive support from the palace, it was not proper for us to see the king's dishonor. Therefore, we have sent and informed the king." Well, this is right after Artaxerxes had become the king, and they are doing their best to make sure that the walls get broken down and they're burned. All those things, we're going to plant seeds of doubt and fear in your mind. You as the king don't want to have to worry about this. Take care of it. So, we go over to Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. It says, "The words of Nehemiah the son of Hakaliah, it came to pass in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the citadel, that Hanani, one of the brethren, came with men from Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, 'The survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire.'" So what happens? "So it was, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven." Now, you might say, well, isn't Nehemiah in a place of influence? How would he not know this stuff? He had to know. Well, my explanation, and I'm not sure it's the right one, is that I think we know about a lot of things in life. But it doesn't really hit home sometimes until, I don't know, the right person says the right thing, or it just grips you at the right moment. You know, I would tell you, do you know that there's a lot of kids in Missouri that need to be adopted? And you'd always say, well, yeah. And if I said to you, there are 1,500 kids, I just went out and looked, 1,500 kids that need to be adopted in Missouri today. What? I didn't know that there was that many. Well, I think it's kind of like this right here. Nehemiah knew that the walls were, that the city was utter destruction and things were bad. But for whatever reason, at this moment, this time, it hit home. It gripped him. It grabbed him and tore at his heart, and it got his attention, you might say. He now is aware, he now knows what's going on, and he realizes it's bad. Something's got to be done. There's something that needs to be done and fixed. And maybe today that's you. Maybe for whatever reason in your life, now you have realized that something needs to be rebuilt. Something needs to be repaired. You've come to full realization, Houston, we have a problem, one might say. So what do you do? Well, it's time for prayer. That's what Nehemiah did. It's time to pull back, not race into things, not get this bad word and information and race into going and fixing things. No, sit down and pray. He mourned, he prayed, and he fasted. It's a reminder of us. Have you ever raced into anything? Raced into a discussion you probably shouldn't have had or you weren't prepared to have? Didn't go so well. He didn't do that. God realized he needed, or Nehemiah realized God was going to help him, that he was going to pray to him. He realized he was hundreds of miles, Kevin said thousands, long ways away from the situation. And how is he going to fix this? Through prayer and fasting and God. How long? Well, we can read that in the month of Nisan is when it started, which is, I had to read about the end of March or April. And then we find out that we read the second chapter there in Kislev, so which is basically November, December. So we're talking about a four-month period, give or take. Three, four, or five-month period that he just prayed. Let's look at the components of this prayer in verses 5 through 11. I'm not going to read it because I see we're going to run way out of time. But there is a word repeated 8 times in this prayer which I think should get our attention. You know what word that is? Servant. This entire attitude of his prayer was about being a servant. And it wasn't this attitude of how can God serve him, but it was about how he would serve the Lord in this situation. Verse 6, your servant, which I pray. It goes on down, your servants and confess the sins. Verse 7, your servant Moses. Verse 8, your servant Moses. Verse 10, now these are your servants. Verse 11, attentive of the prayer of your servant, to the prayer of your servants. And it goes on to say, who desire to fear your name and let your servant prosper this day. Servant, servant, servant. When we go to God in prayer, are we going as a servant? As we approach situations and we pray, I think we need to pray from a servant standpoint. What can be done? How can it be done? What do you want me to do? And that's what he does. God, what do you want? How can I play a part? If Nehemiah had raced out into fixing this, who knows how it could have ended? I'm going to give you some scenarios I think could have happened. But we know that if he didn't pray about it and fast and take his time, he could have gotten out in front of God and the timing may not have been right. And he could have messed things up, just as some of us have probably done. I believe God speaks to all of us. And the question today is are you listening? Are you taking your time to inquire about what it is God wants done? Everything we need is found on waiting on the Lord. I put an acrostic up on the board, ACT. ACT. Adoration, confession, and thanksgiving. Adoration. When we come to the presence of the Lord, it is good for us to understand what we're doing. Understand His power, His knowledge, His wisdom. We need to have proper perspective. Verse 5 here says, and I say, I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments. Most powerful, most awesome God. You know, when we realize how big God is, our problems seem to get smaller and smaller. But we have to realize that and put it in perspective. When we realize how loving He is, how faithful and how powerful He is, it tends to give us peace, doesn't it? But we have to realize that. We have to realize when we go to Him how awesome He is and how really small the problem that we're bringing before Him really is. Confession. Nehemiah confesses. Verse 6 says, "Please let your ear be attentive and your eyes be open that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Both my father's house and I have sinned." We have sinned against you. He includes himself. He is completely humbling himself. We have acted incorruptibly. We know that God resists the proud. We know Nehemiah knew this. God opposes the proud, but gives excessive kindness to the humble. Basically, Nehemiah is saying here, hey, I don't want anything to be in the way of your will, your power, and your working. So I'm going to confess right now, let's get that out of the way. I know I have sinned. We have sinned. Last of the acrostic is thanksgiving. Verse 10, "Now these are your servants and your people whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand." He reminds himself of how good God has been in the past. Can't we all say that? You have helped us time and time and time again. You have blessed me richly time and time and time again. And Nehemiah can say that about the children. You've helped us in the past over and over and over. This is similar to what Paul tells us in Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. He says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." It gives you peace through prayer and thanksgiving. That's what's happening here. He's getting ready to present his request to God. Verse 11, "O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive." And I read this. "Grant him mercy." Who's he speaking of here? Grant him mercy. Artaxerxes. He knows he could lose his job if he handles this wrong. He knows he could lose his life. He could endanger his family's life. You know, I did a little research and reading, and I guess at that time, you just didn't show yourself to be sad in front of the king. The king didn't want to be surrounded by people like that. He didn't have time for people like that. And so here we have Nehemiah who's sad, and he shows himself, and he realizes, and we see by what he says there, that's a dangerous thing. But he knew God was with him, and he knew that was all part of the plan, and it works perfectly. God had spoken to his heart and put in place and in motion this plan for the last 4 months. I don't think, though, if we go back to verse 1 in the first part of this story, that Nehemiah had a clue what he was going to do. I don't think he knew how to tackle this. I don't think he knew that anything was even possible. But he realizes through taking his time and praying that God has given him a plan and he's with him. God begins to give him a plan, and I think if we set the stage here, you're the cupbearer to the king, and God is going to send you hundreds of miles away. You don't know anyone there, but he's going to perform a miracle and he's going to use you to pull it off. Nothing's been able to be accomplished for decades. But guess what? You're going to go in there and in 52 days, 52 short days, rebuild it. Crazy. That's ludicrous. It's not going to happen. Well, I want to talk for a moment about prayer. Prayer clears our vision. You know, I want to give you an illustration. Some of you probably like to get up early in the morning. And some of you have gotten up and it's foggy or there's a mist. And if you've ever sat there long enough and literally watched the fog roll out, it's kind of an interesting thing. It's kind of pretty. You see the sun come up and the rays break through that fog. and that mist, and then it becomes clear. I may not have been able to see the back of the building as the fog was there, but as the sun comes up and it breaks away, I can see. I think prayer gives us that clarity. That prayer is like the light that comes through that fog. Have you ever been foggy? Have you ever thought, I don't even have a clue where to start? I don't have a clue what to even say. I'd love to say something. I know I need to do something. I don't even know where to begin. Well, that's what prayer does. It breaks that fog away and lifts the mist that makes it seem impossible and gives us a way. Prayer quiets our heart and gives us that peace. I will tell you that all of us have worried about something. And I think that it's probably nearly impossible to worry and pray simultaneously. But as you begin to pray, the worry diminishes. We're told to pray without ceasing. We know that when we begin to worry, we probably should just sit and be still and pray, pray, pray. Prayer prepares the way. Battles are won through prayer. Nehemiah prayed for 4 months about a situation that had lasted 5 decades. And he solves it in 2 months. The battle was won in prayer. His work was done in prayer. His preparation was done through prayer. And it shows itself and it manifests itself later in 52 days. 4 months of prayer, 2 months of work, and a miracle takes place. Next, I want to look at Nehemiah's prayer in the last few minutes. The next chapter shows us that the things that God did through Nehemiah and the things that God can do through us. God has a purpose for you. He has a purpose for me. I think He has a purpose for all of His children. He has things that He wants to do in each of us. And through each of us. He has things that He wants us to carry out. We look at Nehemiah, we're reminded of how God truly uses people. Do you think that God only used people in that time? We read story after story of how He used just common people. You think, oh, that was just biblical times, that's done. You think He's using you today? You think He can use you? And the answer, in my opinion, is absolutely. So let's identify how this process would work in maybe our lives and through Nehemiah's story. I just laid out 4 phases, and this is probably about all we'll finish. Awareness. Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. God made him aware. God made Nehemiah aware of what was going on. Well, you say, well, Clayton, he had to be already aware. Yeah, he may have, but guess what? He made him aware to the point that it caused him to say, something has to be done. Well, who do you think was helping with that? God. We ourselves probably at some point in time have been made aware of something that needs fixed or need to be made aware of something that needs to be fixed. Number 2, I have down burden. Verse 4, so it was when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. Well, what caused that? A burden was laid on his heart. When God makes us aware of things, there's like a stirring inside of you. Have you ever felt this stirring? Have you ever said, that's not right. Something needs to be done. And you just can't get away from it. It consumes you. You think about it. You can't sleep about it. You wake up thinking about it. There's this stirring going on. That's what was happening with Nehemiah. He was completely gripped. That stirring had fully occurred within him. It bothered him that Jerusalem was in ruins. Nehemiah couldn't get it out of his mind. God was working in him, poking him, pricking his heart. I believe God spoke to his heart and he speaks to our heart. And he realized something needed to be done, and he was burdened from what the Lord had caused him to realize. Prayer. I've talked a lot about it, but verses 5 through 11, we find Nehemiah constantly praying throughout this book. Not just in these first couple chapters, but he prays a lot. There's fasting. There's prayer throughout the book. Prayer should be our first response to this stirring that God causes within us all. God is talking to each one of us about different things at different times. Maybe He's stirring you about your job or your marriage or your kids or the church or a brother or sister. Once there's a burden on your heart, our first response, and we need to remember this, needs to be to go to prayer, to go to Him in prayer. Chapter 2, verses 1 and 2 says, "And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, the 20th year of the king of Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. Therefore the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad? Since you are not sick, this is nothing but sorrow of heart.' Then I became dreadfully afraid." Why was he afraid? He knew this wasn't something you do. He knew that this wasn't a common occurrence that, oh, I'm just going to act sad in front of the king. Let's see what happens. The king might have fixed his problem real fast. I'll take your head off. You won't be sad anymore, and I don't have to deal with you. But instead, the king realizes there's a problem and seems to care about Nehemiah. Do you think that God was playing a part? I do. Why does the king need to care about Nehemiah? You don't think I can go get another cupbearer? But instead he cares. So this is possibly a little unusual for the king. And we see here that the king cares. And he wants to talk to the king. He knows what he needs to request of the king. He knows exactly how he wants to say it. Why? Because he's been praying about it for 4 months. He knows what he needs from the king. He knows all the way, and we read there, all the way from the supplies he needs to the fact that he needs time. And I even have a plan. But now, you know what? Next step is a big, bold step. The next step is a bold ask. Action needs to take place. And guess what? Nehemiah, even though he was scared to death, he took it. He took this opportunity to have this discussion. You know what? The king could have come to him and he was acting sad. He was moping around. And the king could have said, "Nehemiah, what's wrong with you?" And he could have cleared his throat and said, "Nothing. Everything's fine. I'm good. Don't worry about it. I'll be fine. Just give me a day or two." And thought, "Man, I really want to tell him, but I can't tell him." But he didn't. He was bold. And instead, he did the exact opposite. You think the Lord helped him? You think the Lord has ever needed to help you through a time where you need to be bold? The answer is yes. Have you ever been scared about something? Have you ever been scared to take on something new or to have a conversation? I have. Have you gone to God about that? You know, big decisions can be scary to make. There are times in our life we feel like we reach a major crossroad and there's a major decision that needs to be made. It's scary. But you don't have to go it alone. You don't have to, just as Nehemiah, you need to slow down and go to God and say, "How do I handle this? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to say it? What is your plan so that I can go enact it?" When we're following the Lord and we're praying to the Lord, we find that everything is possible through Christ. Do you not believe the verse that tells us that all things are possible through Christ who strengthens us? Being sad caused him to realize that he should be scared. The last thing, and I'm going to close on this, and I'm sorry I'm going over a little bit, is communication. Verse 5, so he says in verse 5, "And I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I might rebuild it.'" Well, this was a big ask, as I said, because basically he kind of says in a roundabout way, "Hey, you know, I've been a good worker for you, and if you think I've been a good worker," and I'm kind of paraphrasing what I feel like he was saying here, he's kind of reminding the king of his relationship with the king and their tight bond. And he says, you know, "Hey, so think about what he's asking for here. Can you reverse a decision you made 15 years earlier?" Because we read in Ezra, The decision was made, and it was made by him. So do you mind just reversing that? There was this big letter that was written, and it talks about all those things. This would be like, and I'm going to set this analogy, and then we're going to close, because I need us to get this. This would be like you working for a president of the United States, and you're in the Oval Office, and he just passes you in the hallway, and he says, "Clayton, you kind of look sad today. What's going on?" "Well, I just don't think your Middle East policy is very good, and I think I can do something about it." And he goes, "Oh, really? Yeah, so if you'll just bear with me for a minute, I think that if you give me Air Force One, and you send some fighter pilots with me, and you send some tanks in with me, and and write me some letters, because I'm going to need those, because we're going to read on Wednesday night. I'm going to need a little bit of this. You good with that?" And he goes, "Oh, sure. Yeah, no problem." That's about how crazy this is. I mean, seriously. I think we read this story and we go, "Oh, well, there's a guy," and he just goes to the king and says, "Hey, can you do this?" And the king says, "Yeah, sure, go ahead. And you can have my lumber, and I'm going to write you some letters to the governors and all these." Crazy. Absolutely crazy. But we know that it was possible only in one way. Only in one way, and I'll fast forward, but that is through God. There in verse 8, "And the king granted them to me according to the good hand of my God upon me." Nehemiah is absolutely aware that this only happened because of God. Well, the beauty of this is I have three more pages to discuss on our Wednesday night study. But what I want us to realize is that there are things that we can identify with Nehemiah that absolutely apply to us today. We could say that Nehemiah was kind of a nobody from Nowheresville. And you know what? Maybe we're nobody from Nowheresville. But there are times in our life where we need to just sit still, back up, weep about it a little bit probably, cry, and pray and fast and realize that it's only going to work when we wait on God and we listen to His plan and we say, "God, I have no clue what to do with this. I need Your help. I need Your words. I need Your wisdom. I need Your patience. I need You." Just like Nehemiah, there's not a chance in a million that that should have worked. I guarantee if God wasn't on His side, it wouldn't have. It wouldn't have. But just like we have things that we need some definite help with, we realize that by going to God and praying and fasting and listening, all things are possible. If you need the Lord today, if you haven't named Him, I can tell you, for those of us who have, it's the only way you'll make it. It's the only way you'll make it through life. It's the only way you'll make it to live with Him eternally. If you've gotten sidetracked, you've got things in your life that need to be rebuilt, come forward as we stand and sing.